morning. Today is Monday, October the 17th. Joining us, well, you're not the bank gal.
Not the bank gal.
And you're, what are we going to, well, okay. Jennifer Budwig from Redwood Capital Bank. Yeah, well, the bank dude, I can't.
Oh, yeah. Bank gal works.
Yeah,
I'll take
okay.
that.
Jennifer from the bank is with us. Our quote this morning comes from M. Scott Peck. You can't truly listen to anyone and do anything else at the same time. Ah.
True statement.
But you've had a couple of business interviews with folks where they're either disrupted or their mind's wandering and you have to bring them back.
Oh, yeah. And that happens with employees and it happens with my spouse and it happens with you, Brian.
Yeah. It just happens, yeah. I suppose, when did you do the first marijuana study?
So I did a paper that I wrote when I was going to school up at Seattle, Washington. It was called Pacific Coast Banking School. And it was a two-year program where it's a correspondence program. So we actually go up to Seattle three different times. But long story short, as part of the program, we have to write a thesis or what they call a management paper. And so we can choose a topic that's pertinent to the banking industry or something specific to our bank. And that was back in 2010. And at that point, Proposition 19 was on the ballot. And that was for the legalization of recreational use for cannabis. That was a really hot topic going on in our community. So
why are you using PC words?
It's because I was corrected a few times. That
by who?
By PC correct people.
See? Now I'm going to correct you going the other way. We're either going to call it pot. Or so, marijuana, your choice.
Okay, a pot. I wrote a pot paper. Yeah.
Yeah, that's paper. What I grew up with, too. Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, it was actually really, really an interesting topic. Obviously, it was a hot one at that time as well. So did a ton of research, did a lot of interviews. Anyway, what my goal was to try to determine what kind of an economic impact that the cannabis industry has to Humboldt County, the pot industry has to Humboldt County.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And so,
we've talked about it. I know you've had a lot of interaction. A lot of folks have been exposed to it. I still think that we're too conservative too often.
I was very conservative, and that was by design. I didn't want anyone to think I was overinflating numbers or there was any sensationalism. But the bottom line was that. Well, if you were to use a 10% eradication factor in consideration of the amount of plants that are pulled every year in Humboldt County, and what I mean by that is that most people think that, I say most people in law enforcement, feel that we don't get even close to 5%.
That's why I've heard less than 5.
Yeah. And in fact, I spoke with Sheriff Downey yesterday, and what he was saying that, you know, that he's gauging there's about 4,000 to 6,000 gardens out there. And he said, you know, last year they got 80 of them. So that's 1.6%, right? And obviously it's been less and less each year as their resources have continued to dwindle.
Well, and more pot farms.
Well, it's a combination of both. Yeah. You're totally right. And so so in my study, basically, if you were to use a 10% eradication factor based on, at that point in time when I was doing the study, it was 200,000 plants, roughly, were eradicated, then it ends up, by the time you monetize that, so you take those plant numbers and you add a monetary value to it, it was about $2.5 billion in terms of what's grown in Humboldt County. And, of course, you know, some subjectivity obviously involved there, but I think I've heard more. I've heard people say that it's more than that, which very well could be.
KINS News and Information Times 819.
You've never heard us before because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 823. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Jennifer Budwig, pot expert. It's interesting for me, the numbers, and we've certainly, you and I have spent hours talking about this stuff. The underreporting part of it is one aspect. The lack of a seven-time pass-through, I mean, the normal figure that's used, right? Somebody spends a dollar in a community and passes seven times before it leaves. With the cartel involvement, I think we're lucky to get one and a half. So yeah. I think the balancing factor is you went really soft. There's not nearly as much taken out. But on the flip side, this stuff isn't hanging around here. It's going boom to Russia or Siberia or Poland or Mexico or wherever the mafia is anymore. And it's out of here a lot quicker than a normal transaction would be. But all that was 6 years ago. Things have changed a little bit. I still have a very tough time trying to think of this as normal. The pot industry isn't normal. The Emerald Triangle isn't normal. Our area isn't normal. But we have just become desensitized to an awful lot of what would blow people away if they were, let's say, from Kansas or Missouri or from Georgia. I mean, that part is as challenging to me as the financial part or the environmental part. Is this cultural aspect to it? With the subsequent years, have you done any follow-up or any thought to what the cultural cost is to Humboldt County, whether it's the law enforcement part, the homeless stuff we've been dealing with, the trimmigrants that have been in the news the last couple of weeks, and what that has done to depress legal businesses?
Yeah, I have not done anything from that aspect because that's basically when I wrote this paper, I was strictly looking at that economic component. But as I did my research, it became very clear that there's so many other aspects to this. You have the, you know, the criminal element, you have the environmental element, you have the socioeconomic impact. There's just so many facets to it that, and that's what I told someone one time, it was like, if I had time, I would love to actually write a book on all of it. You know, I mean, in terms of looking at all of these different angles to it, because there's so many facets to it. And this was just one component of that, you know, and that was another, you know, what I was just talking about before was strictly based on more looking at kind of gross from the standpoint of what kind of gross numbers are grown here. But you're absolutely spot on. Like, then the second step is looking at, well, how much of that really hits our economy? Because so much of it does not, you know, and a lot of it, whether it goes overseas or to San Francisco or is buried in the woods somewhere or whatever that looks like.
Oh, the peppercini bottle.
I've heard it. Factor. Oh, pickle barrel.
Is amazing to me. Some of the different things that are out there. Under Sheriff Hansel was on yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Last week. And Billy was talking about some of the challenges with this time of the year. Willow Creek's, I've heard 100, 125 out on the medians, trimmigrants. He said Garberville is going crazy. You know, it's like a big town. So I, you know, last week I was in the Garberville area and drove through. Yeah, there's a buzz going. But, I mean, it's kind of like The Walking Dead. I don't watch that. Do you watch that one?
I don't, no.
Neither do I. But, you know, the zombies and just kind of everything at a different pace, walking. I mean, just it had a whole different uncomfortableness about it. But there was activity. And I think, other than McKinleyville, I think there's probably more money spent in southern Humboldt, either by the industry or by those employed in the industry, that it really has that vibrancy of economic activity. Now, you're not seeing construction. You're not seeing a lot of the normal associated things with it.
Right.
But there is stuff's going on. When you look at this, how do you balance at the end and say it's a net plus or net minus to Humboldt County as it is today before the elections?
Yeah, and that's so difficult to say because all of those other pieces that weigh into it, you know, I mean, in terms of
intuition, experience. I mean, you're not going to get it down on paper everywhere. I mean, just
right,
that overall, do you think, does Humboldt County benefit from the pot industry? Well, or do we lose because of the pot industry?
Well, I mean, I think as far as looking back over the years, as the timber and the fishing industries declined, and there's no doubt that marijuana backfilled a lot of that industry money.
Did it cause some of that? I mean, remember early on, right, the tree sitters and the spikers and the environmental activists, did those folks then meld into the marijuana industry? Or are these two separate, entirely distinct camps?
I really don't know the answer to that. I
mean, paper number three. We're just going to give you a series here, and you're going to end up with your book.
But I think that as time has gone by, I mean, you definitely went from an era where it was more, a lot of the hippies migrated up here from the Haight-Ashbury days, and a lot more mom and pop growers, and they were growing it, you know, smaller amounts and maybe for their own use, and they would sell, you know, enough to kind of get by, sort of
the boutique.
Yeah, just and they were more environmentally conscious, and now the grows are getting bigger, and then, you know, pretty soon you've got, the word is out there that, oh yeah, Humboldt County, I mean, they make this amazing product up there, and you can grow it, and it's easy to grow, and
or there's no enforcement of it.
Yeah,
I think the two together, particularly in the 80s, early 90s, before camp hit. Yeah, I mean, you know, there was that opportunity.
Yeah, and then camp did hit, and I mean, was pretty successful when they came in. And but if, as the rest of it, then their resources started drying up. They went away altogether. They were replaced by the, it's called CERT, the Cannabis Eradication Reclamation Team. So there's still some assistance that the county gets, but very, very, very little. And when I was talking to Sheriff Downey, what he was saying was that, and there's another group as part of the DEA, so they supposedly are supposed to get 3 weeks a year in assistance with the helicopters and so forth, and they had them for 2 weeks last year, and they ran out of money. So there you go.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Jennifer Budwig from Redwood Capital Bank. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redeck. Jennifer, as you look at what it is today, on the cusp of legalization or not, the concept of boutique farmer or the institutional plantation, the druggie or the hippy-dippy weatherman, and everything in between. Has this gone the way that you thought that it would as an industry for the last 5 or 6 years?
For the most part, yes. I think that, I mean, the amount is just mind-boggling. But back when I was looking at this 5 years ago, one of the things that was going on was prices were coming down, and there was a lot of issues with concern about, okay, now as prices come down, we need to grow more to make the same amount of money. There was, people were again growing more, but then I think as things have progressed and we've gotten to be known as a bit of a liberal county from law enforcement standpoint, that
a bit
that, you know, there, a lot more people are just coming in and, you know, and growing to make their big bucks. And, you know, I guess the piece I really struggle with is, you know, what that leaves behind, because, you know,
the environmental stuff
and, you know, the costs that are being incurred, to whether it's the cleanup that's required after they leave, or, you know, the things that are, the environmental is a huge piece of that, of course, you know, but just the water is huge. Water's such a big deal now.
That's kind of a surprise, I think, for a lot of folks. I was talking with a fellow you know in Fortuna who grew up in Eureka and said, remember the drought in the 70s? Oh, yeah. He said, the river is continuing to flow. Here we have a regular year, and we don't have any motion in the water at all.
Yeah.
Where is EPA? Mm-hmm. Where are the state fish and game? Where are those guys? I mean, why is it falling on the sheriff's department to mm-hmm. prosecute instead of these folks that are professed and have mission statements associated with water and environmental quality? Where are they?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it because we're out in a little backwater part of the world here that nobody raises a stink?
I know, and it's surprising because we had such when the whole thing was going on with the timber industry, you had the environmentalists showing up in groves and fighting that fight. And, you know, this is a significant environmental impact, both from the water standpoint and then the other things that go on from generator spills to the chemicals that are used and on and on and on. And so, you know, where's that fight now? So, and I don't know the answer to that. I mean, in terms of what goes on in that world, but
we could extrapolate a couple of things.
We'll extrapolate away.
I think they're growing.
And so there's not the pushback that
there's,
you have.
There's no pushback. They're getting financial remuneration in a different way, probably at a higher level than what they were doing before.
Mm-hmm.
I would have no question that a significant percentage, I don't know to what extent, but, you know, Friends of the River,
mm-hmm.
where are they?
Yeah.
You know, you don't hear about, you know, those, the Environmental Center. You don't, I mean, not blanket, you know, I'd save the phone calls. But those folks that were so adamant and so aggressive about so many things, I've not heard them standing next to Sheriff Downey saying, yeah,
mm-hmm.
when he was talking about the ferret or whatever the furry critter was that was found and some of the other mammal and bird situations that with some of the rodenticides and things of that nature out in the groves.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they? I mean, you hear about them in one application, but if there's consistency,
mm-hmm.
you'd hear them across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear that.
Yeah, and what's amazing about that, too, is there's so much concrete evidence around that. In my Rotary Club, the Fishing Game, there was a couple of gentlemen from Fishing Game that came and did a presentation, and they had done a whole bunch of research on this, and they were able to show, you know, just, I think it was like looking over the last 10 years in terms of where our streams and rivers were, and then just being able to look at, okay, what your rainfall levels are and where those levels should be, you know, and then looking at the photography they had probably most likely came from Google Earth, but just showing the different ways that this water is being captured and taken specifically for the grows, you know, and that doesn't even mention, you know, the water tanks, the water trucks, you know, that you see traveling all the time on Highway 36.
Or, well, remember there was a big argument about the suckerfish, whatever it was that came in from Lake Pillsbury?
Yeah.
And was all through the Eel River, and how do we get rid of this thing because of the salmon?
Mm-hmm.
Have you mm-hmm. heard about that one lately either?
Not lately, no.
You know, and furry water now is kind of what the norm is during the summertime.
Furry water. Oh, just because of
all the moss and stuff because of the nitrogen.
The levels are so low. And
yeah. Yeah. This is a different ball game than what we'd had before. And that's the fear that I've got with the legalization.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, I presume that there's going to be at least 50% is still going to be here. 50% may, you know, be RJR and somebody else coming in and doing the growing in flat in the valley. But it's still going to be here. It's mm-hmm. not going to disappear. So if we can't take care of it now, are we going to be able to take care of it tomorrow? And I'm not reading anything. I'm not hearing anything. People celebrating the fact that they're going to be able to get in and take, you know, maintain a minimum water flow. And. We had the same arguments in the Klamath,
mm-hmm.
but we don't hear it down here. Now, why is that lack of consistency is something that just is curious to me.
Yeah, and is the Klamath River, though, is that a lot of that because of the push by the Yurok tribe and their involvement?
It could be.
Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah.
You know, the Indian rights and things of that nature. Yeah. But when you're talking about the salmon and protected species and.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're going after the farmers.
Yeah.
Up north, but nobody's talking about the farmers on the eel.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of them. A lot of them, yeah.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Jennifer Budwig.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Jennifer Budwig. Jennifer, one of the things that some of our buddies in law enforcement talk about is the THC content, that the plants that were early on, the Boutique Haight-Ashbury people coming up here, it was like a 3 is what I'm, and I don't know what 3 something.
Percent.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. And now it's up, you can, in some instances, get it up to an 80. And folks taking that become almost comatose, rigid in their it has significant physical immediate impact as well as whatever lingering mental impacts that might be. It's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing in the November 8th ballot that indicates any distinction between the levels.
Any limitation,
of THC.
Yeah.
It really seems like we're playing with fire. So when we look at the 6 years, we look at this industry, we look at what it's costing, do we really know what it is costing?
Well, to address that, what you were just talking about, on the THC levels, you're absolutely right. Back in the day, 3%-ish was probably more the norm. But as the industry has progressed and there's been a lot of changes to the plants, then from what I understand, like, it's 25% would be more from your typical plant if you were smoking it or eating it. The 80% level you're talking about is there's these butane honey oil labs where there are honey oil labs, and it's a different way of processing it where they take a beaker and they stuff it full with everything from trim to bud. And then they add butane to it, and then it leaches out the oil in the bottom.
The lavender machines.
Something along those lines. But anyway, the bottom line is it comes out, and they kind of make it in the form of a cake. It's kind of what it looks like. It's circular, and it's probably an inch thick.
Cake like carrot cake?
Like something like that, Brian.
Oh, okay.
And so, but those are supposed to be 60 to 80% THC, which is off the charts level, right? So if you were to smoke something like that, then yeah, it's a whole different scenario. And supposedly it's very hallucinogenic and it's more psychopathic. Or
like LSD.
Or more like acid from what I understand.
Yeah.
So that whole level. And you're right about Proposition 64. From what I understand, and I haven't read it in its entirety, but that's what's going to be on the ballot. That's the initiative specifically to recreationalize cannabis, marijuana, legalize marijuana recreationally. And so the Colorado, Washington, and Oregon all have limitations in terms of the maximum THC that those products could have in it, unless it's medicinal. They don't have the limitations there, but they do on the recreational sales. The one that's going to be on the ballot, from what I understand, there are not THC limitations, so that's very concerning.
So as I know, the city of Eureka is looking at a butane sale restriction ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to see some of that brought into this industry, do you see? Is there demand by the industry to have some of this in play, or is it still kind of wild, wild west and will be whether it's legal or not?
It sounds wild, wild west. I know that there's a lot of risk involved in it because they've had several explosions, deaths because of the butane. And there's apparently other means to do it, like carbon dioxide and so forth. So we'll see.
Thanks for coming by. Yeah.
It's always good to see you, Brian.
Hey, you know, having the second version of something is always fun.
Well,
look forward to the reports. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been an interesting transition, and
Who thought, as a banker, this would take you there? See you all tomorrow.